Good evening and welcome to Coast AM. I'm Dave Schrader. I'll be your host for this evening. And we've got a great show lined up for you. Crazy cryptids, they're popping up all over around the world. Since the beginning of January, there's been quite a few sightings of many different creatures, from Bigfoot to lake monsters, flying creatures, and more. We're going to be talking with the director of the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society and cryptozoologist Eric Altman in a few moments. Then we want you to stay with us for the rest of the evening. Joining us in hour two, Dr. Ted Chu, the author of Human Purpose and Transhuman Potential. Playing God, the Art of Transhumanism. Is there a line that we should draw in the sand when it comes to mucking about with DNA, changing the parameters of humanity? Should we push along the next evolutionary jump? That's what most of the show is going to be on this evening. We're also going to open up phone lines for you to join in, chime in, and let us know your thoughts on this subject. This is a fascinating topic, one that's had me transfixed for years, as I've heard tales of being able to manipulate the DNA now that we're able to map the sequence. Will we be able to pick blue-eyed, blonde-haired children, redheads with green eyes? Will we be able to flip those switches and change the parameters of humanity and the selection that our normal bodies and evolution goes through? We'll find out more about that this evening. We'll go through a lot of the philosophical debate, the morality of it, the science of it, and that's going to take place tonight. So stay tuned. We've got all that and more coming up on Coast to Coast AM. Good evening. Welcome to Coast AM. I'm Dave Schrader. I'll be your host this evening. I'm the host of Darkness Radio, heard out of Minneapolis, St. Paul, Monday through Friday, 9 p.m. till midnight Central, leading into Coast to Coast. And once a month, we're joined by our Monster Watch specialist, cryptozoologist, and the director of the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society, Eric Altman. He is joining us here in the first hour of Coast to Coast AM this evening to talk to us about the myriad of sightings that have taken place in the very short span of this year already. And Eric, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us this evening.
Oh, it's an honor to be with you, Dave. Thanks for having me.
This has been an unbelievably cold winter all around the United States, around the world. I mean, it's been affecting countries that haven't had this kind of weather in a long time, but yet it hasn't seemed to subside with the strange sightings of these cryptid creatures popping up. Do you think that it has something to do with the weather that's forcing these creatures out into the open more, or is it just, people are bored and have a lot more time to look out their windows and notice these things?
Well, it may be a possibility of both, actually. And there really is no explanation as to why people are having these encounters or seeing these strange creatures. We're getting reports into the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society and into my email box of all kinds of strange creatures that people are reporting, from lake monsters to the infamous chupacabra. A lot of Bigfoot sightings occurring in the first couple of months of 2014. There's just so much going on, it's almost hard to keep up with.
It is bizarre, especially with the amount of different creatures that seem to be showing up and popping up all around the world. Is there an influx? Do you notice when there's shows like, when Finding Bigfoot first came out, did that kind of create a new uprise of Bigfoot sightings? And then after it's been on for a few seasons, those new reports start to settle down, and then you have a new show like the $1 million Bigfoot Challenge. Does it start to resurge and cause more of these sightings for your organization?
We've seen an increase in sightings, yes, and I do believe that it can be attributed to the show. Of course, the show is reaching out to millions across the country, and it's become very popular, and Bigfoot has become, once again, a household name. So I think that it's become more comfortable for people to discuss the subject, to watch the subject on TV, and to report the subject to researchers such as myself. I know from our organization's standpoint, we've received a lot more reports than we have in the past, and it may be attributed to shows like Finding Bigfoot or the Spike TV $10 million Bigfoot Bounty or the Mountain Monsters. There's so many different shows out there today that are really bringing a lot of attention to the cryptozoology field.
Do you feel that it's detrimental to your field as a real investigator as well to have this kind of hype people throwing a $10 million bounty on the head of Bigfoot?
It's good and bad. I see it as a two-edged sword. One edge of the sword is it's great that people are finally seeing what's going on and understanding that there's, you know, these creatures out there that are being reported, and investigators such as myself investigating them and taking them seriously. And it's not as taboo as a subject as it once was. But the other side of the sword, it's making it difficult for us to take these reports seriously from people who are just throwing them at us. You know, they're reporting all these different encounters, and we've got to go through and really sort out what's really good and legitimate to what's fabricated and made up. We've got to sort the wheat from the chaff, so to speak, and it makes our jobs a little more difficult.
Well, and in 2014, you've got the ability that everybody's got a camera on their phone, they've got a camera in their car, they've got a camera on their computers, on their tablets. You know, you would think that there would be more corroborative evidence for these creatures actually existing, but for the most part, I've seen a lot of footage, and I know we're going to talk about Les Stroud and Survivor Man a little bit later. The footage that he's even putting forth looks so fake to me. And some of these things look so bizarre and horribly added later, like a special effect. I got to guess it's making the lives of real investigators harder and harder, because it's going to get harder to differentiate between the real stuff and the garbage.
It is, and it's not just the TV shows that are doing it. It's the special effects, the software that's available now to the public. There's a lot of tools out there that can manipulate video and manipulate film and put something in the film, Photoshop something into the film that wasn't there originally, or manipulate it to the point where there's something there, but you can't tell what it is. And even though folks have all this technology at their fingertips, the cell phone cameras, the video cameras, the GoPro cameras, all this great equipment, there's so much out there now that, again, we have to, as researchers, weed through all this to really try to find the legitimate possible evidence versus what's hoaxed or somebody in a suit or a misidentification. It is a lot tougher for us.
With that in mind, you know, because special effects and costuming have gotten so much better, for many years we've been accustomed to these grainy, kind of out-of-focus, far-away videotapes of what could be a big hairy hominid walking around on two legs. When you see one that's incredibly clear and concise, is it harder for you as an investigator to wrap your head around believing that that's a real piece of footage? You know what I mean? It sounds silly almost in a sense, because you'd expect better, higher quality imagery from all of the equipment and technology we have. But sometimes when I see these video footage pieces that are so clear, it makes me even question it more. I kind of hearken to the days of the grainy, you know, out of focus pictures, because it seems like there was more legitimacy to it.
Well, I agree with you. Yeah, it's almost a case of buyer beware. You know, you see this thing and you're like, oh, it's almost too good to be true. Because it has such detail to it, because, you know, the technology's gotten so great that we have the high-def cameras. Almost everybody has high-def cameras or high-def video cameras, and we expect to see very good quality film or photographs. And when you see that much detail, you're almost like, that's too good to be true, because we're so accustomed to seeing the blurry footage of something running across the road or a fleeting glimpse of something brown in the forest between a couple of trees. And it's so distant that you can't make out what it is. That's what we've become accustomed to. And if you see something that detailed, you've got to take a step back and really, really analyze that piece of footage or that photograph and try to make a determination if it is maybe a special effect or someone in a suit, a very detailed, very, very complex suit. And they're able to make those these days. We see them on TV and in movies all the time.
Well, let's get to it. I know you've got a myriad of different examples of what's been going on since January 1st of this year. So let's talk about some more of the bizarre and strange things that have been reported.
Sure. As I mentioned, the Chupacabra, that's been a story that's been circulating now for the last 4 or 5 years. And it's not the Chupacabra that we were first introduced that came out of Puerto Rico in 1995, not this alien-looking, scaly being that runs around on two legs and sucks the blood out of goats. This is more like a canine type of creature, almost like a blue dog or a coy dog, or even possibly a coyote that has really bad mange on it. These have been reported in the Texas Panhandle and southern Texas, and now up into Oklahoma and other parts of the country are starting to see and report these strange, as they're calling them, chupacabras. And I have a story from February about one of these supposed sightings, and they asked the question, is the Houston chupacabra possibly a real animal that's purposefully bred? The article goes on to say a recent sighting of the mythical chupacabra could be the result of exotic animal owners interbreeding their pets, according to a Houston animal control expert. Two residents of the Dolliver Point gate community near Gessner and Dolliver claim to have seen giant footprints along the Buffalo Bayou and say that they have photos to prove it's the mysterious chupacabra. Scott Black and David McKee took several photos of the animal Sunday, according to KPRC News. It was very, very vicious, very long, longer than a human, said Claude Griffin from Gotcha Pest Control, who was brought into the scene to check out the photos. It was a pretty big animal, and it was very well fed. Griffin said that it was not the first one he's come across and asserts that people are deliberately trying to breed animals that match descriptions of these mythical creatures. They are real animals, they are crossbreeds, and they are hazardous to humans. They're just looking for food and probably can kill your cat, Griffin said. Griffin went on to say that the animal could be a mix between a greyhound and a wolf. People are looking for a big prize. They want that $10,000 reward for finding one. Houston Animal Control officers said they've heard of people trying to breed dogs to look like the so-called direwolves from the TV show Game of Thrones. You can cross breeds, said Officer Chris Glassner, but so far we haven't seen any of them out there. Back in 2007, Phyllis Canyon of Curo, Texas, claimed she found a dead chupacabra on her ranch after it had been killing her chickens. Animal rights group PETA said it's time for hunters to try to stop killing exotic animals they might see. So there's an example of these strange animals like a chupacabra that's running around out there that people are reporting. And it may be a case, in this story particularly, where they're interbreeding other animals, like I mentioned, a koi dog or a blue dog, or a wolf and a coyote. Very strange animal that's running around in the southern part of the country.
Right, and is there, looking at the science and looking at the issues that are being reported with animals, there's photographs of bears with mange, coyotes with mange, fox with mange, raccoons with mange, and they are really eerie-looking creatures without the fur that we're used to seeing them in. And they're out there running around. Is there any kind of idea? I mean, we know Dutch elm disease hits these type of trees, and we know that we can track different diseases through different animal breeds. Do they have any idea in the community, cryptid community, or even in the science community, of why there seems to be this higher ratio of these animals that appear to have mange and have lost their hair? Or is it just, that's the populace that's noticed because it stands out more?
I think it's the latter of your question. I think people are noticing it because it does stand out more. Animals with mange have been around for a long, long time. This isn't something new that's just happened in the last couple of years. Although mange is a disease that not only just the animal's hair falls out, but it causes a lot of serious skin conditions. In some of these photos we've seen of the bear and the coyote and different animals, they look hideous. They don't look like anything we're familiar with. And this isn't a disease that's been around for just a few years. As I said, it's been around for a long, long time. But I think because some of these people are catching photographs of these strange animals, it's been brought out into the public light a little more so than it has in the past. So people are seeing these things now, and they're saying, what in the world is that? When, before it was that's a dog with mange or a bear with mange. Now it's brought out into the public light, and people are looking at these animals like, what in the world is that thing?
Right. And what? Give me a couple of the other examples. I know you mentioned this really weird flying creature to me off air. Let's hear a little bit about that one.
Yeah, there was a strange report that came out of Colorado that we talked about a strange flying creature that was supposedly seen in the attic of a house when the gentleman described it as possibly looking, as to him, like the Mothman creature. Very interesting case. The gentleman who saw it described the thing as being about 7 foot long, had very thin with smooth, dark skin. When he saw it, he said it was crouched down about 7 feet in length. It had arms and hands that he could see on it. It had a mouth and very sharp, pointy teeth, like similar to a piranha. And when they shined a flashlight on it, the thing disappeared into the wall and that's the last they saw of it. But a very strange creature that they said possibly could have been the Mothman creature.
He was able to get that much detail from that quick little glimpse that he could tell what kind of teeth it had, the length, the size. I mean, that to me starts to hearken of a hoax, and I don't know where you are on it, but it seems that people that have really had a moment like that when they've witnessed that, they really don't drink in all the details that they thought they did. And have you seen that with most of your reports of cryptids as they come into your website?
Yes, I have. It's very rare that someone gets that close of a look or that detail of a look of a cryptid. So you're right. This report to me does sound almost like it's been fabricated or even embellished. There were details in this, very fine details in this report that was submitted that I really questioned, because with a flashlight, as you know, in a dark room, you're going to see something for a few seconds, and I don't understand personally how someone could get that good of a look at something, especially when it's fleeing away from them. So it's very rare that people report to us that they get these detailed looks at these creatures. It does happen. But most of the time, it's a fleeting glimpse of something large running across the road, or just ducking into the brush and disappearing from sight, or something flying overhead, and look up and see a large thunderbird or large bird-like creature flying above them, and they're not able to get a good look or a good description of the creature they saw. So in this particular case of this whatever it was in the attic, I think a lot of that story might have been embellished.
Was there any a precursor to this? Did they say, had they been hearing weird things up in the attic for weeks or months at a time, or was this a relatively new phenomenon that happened for them?
It was a relatively new phenomenon. According to the story, what's interesting about it is it was the father and son, and they were apparently cleaning out the garage in the attic, and the father went up into the attic to do some work, and he heard some movement, like he described tapping or footsteps in the attic. And that's when he saw something move, and he put the flashlight on it, and that's when he saw this strange-looking creature or whatever it was. He first thought it was a large rat, but then as he focused on this creature, according to the story, he quickly learned it wasn't a rat. It was some kind of long, tall, dark figure that was moving around in the attic.
See, now this is another reason I don't like the outdoors. You know that. We've talked about it before. You know, the outdoors is filled with gross things and creepy crawlers and things that crawl and things that fly and things that creep around on the ground. And I'm not fond of any of them. I got to be honest with you, Eric. And now that you're hearing that they're getting into the houses, they're up in the attics, and these things are, you know, could possibly exist. Again, we have to draw the line because some of them just sound so fantastic that there's, you know, this sounds like a whole new breed of cryptid, something nobody has ever seen or reported before. Is that correct, or have there been variations of this? Because this doesn't even really sound like the Mothman.
No, it doesn't. To me, it doesn't. And my assessment of this particular story is it may be the gentleman in question saw a bat or some kind of, I mean, even might have seen a rat, and his mind instantly went into putting more into what he saw. It maybe started running wild, and he was actually seeing something that truly wasn't there. The teeth, the long arms, the fingers. I mean, his mind might have made this up as he was seeing it. That's a very good possibility. It might have been just a simple misidentification that became much more of a story than it truly was. I've never heard of such a creature before, other than maybe in folklore and stories that are, you know, used to scare kids, but I never heard of such a cryptid or creature like this before in my research.
Yeah, I think like the Stegoi from Romania, the vampiric-like creatures have more of a visage like this. This is something you'd expect to hear from that type of experience. I'm boggled by these type of creatures popping up. I know we've got very short time left here, about a minute in this segment. What else have you got for us that you can talk a little bit about?
Well, real quick, we discussed this last evening on your show. A woman from Ireland took a picture of, and we talked about the pictures, took a picture of some kind of large, dark figure standing in the tree line not too far from her as she was filming at a beach. She was out there filming the damage to the shoreline, and she was snapping pictures with her Nikon camera. And when she went home to review the pictures on her website, she was surprised to see this large, dark figure, and she has no idea what it is. She's asked for opinions on several social media sites, and have gotten replies from different people saying it could be a wild boar, a jaguar, a yeti. So here's a perfect example of what we talked about, the blurry picture, where it may be a misidentification. People are putting more into it than what it really is.
I know we're going to take a break here relatively soon. When we come back, we're going to talk about a really creepy creature that was caught videotaped under the water in a pond, a frozen pond. We've also going to talk about the Rick Dyer Bigfoot debacle and Les Stroud, the survivor man. That's all coming up next, right here on Coast to Coast AM. If the paranormal, the supernatural, and the plain strange intrigue you, then check out Darkness Radio Monday through Friday, 9 p.m. till midnight Central Time. You can find us live streaming on darknessradio.com, or you can go right to the iHeartRadio application. We're Twin Cities KTLK AM 1130 and download, listen to the shows that way. I will be with the Coast Insider this Tuesday at, I believe, 6 p.m. Pacific time. That's 8 p.m. Central time, 9 p.m. Eastern. I'll be in their live chat room. You can find more information by going to the coasttocoastam.com website. Flying creatures, crawling creatures, now creatures under the water in a pond. Eric, of all places, now there's no place outside I feel safe. I can't go into the air. I can't walk around in the woods because something's going to get me. And now I got to worry about ponds?
This story is bizarre. We talked about this off the air, Dave, and this is unlike anything I've ever seen before. And the story comes from a website, a blog on website called UFO Sightings Hotspot. It's out of Lithuania, and this is the eyewitness's testimony. I'll read you what he's written. So I was walking my dog in the evening just before sunset. We were traveling into the vast fields of nature to escape common modern view. By accident, I found a pond. It caught my interest since I saw a water hole in the middle of it. Usually people drill water holes in the ponds where fish live at wintertime so fish can breathe. I thought, I will see some fishes and stuff, but as soon as I came closer, I noticed that it was evaporating. You can't see this in the video, but I was filming with my phone, which does not have a high-resolution camera. When I stopped in the frozen pond farther away from the water hole where I was standing, ice was 20 centimeters thick or even more, and the water hole looked like it was melted with a fire or something. You can see around the water hole that there is snow or maybe ice particles blasted away from the center of this water hole. It is not volcanic activity. In the middle of Europe, Lithuania, there are no volcanoes or underground volcanic currents. Plus, water would be boiling. There are no pipes in the middle of nowhere, so not a damaged pipe. Natural gas or oil, impossible. It is not hot, or why only this part of the pond is melted just above this thing slash activity, or what reason would be melted. And the eyewitness goes on to say, at first glance, this thing that I saw in the pond looked like a jellyfish, but it's not. And when the video is posted on the Coast to Coast AM site, you'll see exactly what I'm referring to. This creature or animal is the strangest looking animal I've ever seen.
I agree. And it's actually kind of chilling to watch this. Again, I don't know, when you first watch the video of him coming up on the thawed out part in the middle of the lake, which, as my understanding is, the middle of the lake is always going to be the thinnest because it's the last part to freeze. So it's probably right. The first part that's going to begin thawing, and why he may have thought that it was reacting that way. So the video, as he goes up to it, it's kind of dark and murky. All of a sudden he moves and you see it a little bit clearer, and you can see underneath this water this thing come up. And we've got it up on the Coast to Coast AM website. Click on tonight's show, and you'll see the blurb about Eric Altman in the first hour and a little line that says related link. And if you click that link, it'll take you to watch this piece of video. And I don't know. Again, I'm not keen on lakes and ponds anyway, knowing what kind of nasty stuff people dump into them. But here you've got something that it almost looks like a giant fluke or a huge plecostomus, the way that the lips are pressing up against the glass and almost suckling the ice, the way you would see them against the inside of a fish tank. But this thing would have to be massive if it's a plecostomus or, you know, one of the bottom feeders. It's a huge creature. And you said you've never seen anything like this in reports.
No, this is the first video I've ever seen of this type of aquatic animal, or I don't even know what it is. I don't know how to describe it. I think your description is probably the closest thing that we could use to describe this weird-looking entity. It appears to have like a pink or a reddish-colored maybe mouth or a tongue or something. I'm not sure. It's the most bizarre-looking video that I've personally ever seen.
Yeah, it's weird. Again, we've got it up on the Coast to Coast AM website. You can email me, dave@darknessradio.com. Let me know what you think it is that you're looking at, because I can't make heads nor tails. It just looks like some kind of really horrific creature, and yet another reason why I will refuse to go outside this spring and summer. I'm just going to get myself one of those giant hamster balls to walk around outside, Eric. That's, I think, the safest bet for me.
Dave in the plastic bubble.
Yes, that's what it takes. Talking about weird things, there's Les Stroud, Survivor Man, has publicly talked about his interest in Bigfoot and possible encounters in the past. Mm-hmm. He did a special for Canada, which aired last week, and I believe there's one for North America that will be airing this week. And I know you haven't had a chance to see either one of these, but you've seen the video footage of what inspired the episode, which is this Bigfoot-looking creature in the woods. Now, have you taken a good long look at that video a few times?
Yeah, that video has been around for a while. It was put out by a researcher, a Canadian researcher, and a filmmaker by the name of Todd Standing, and he had a website called Sylvanic.com, which was an area in British Columbia where he claims that he would encounter clans of these Bigfoot-like creatures, and some of his encounters were very violent and aggressive with the creatures, and he has multiple videos that he's put out over the years. Very, very controversial. A lot of the videos don't show enough to discern what's in them. However, the one that you're referring to appears to be a face of some kind of hair-covered being behind several pine tree branches.
To me, it looks like a wood carving. And, I know where they say the fur is, it looks like a light wood with the sun coming at it. And you can see the detail in the wood, the grain, and it never moves. It doesn't seem to breathe. And they show the video for quite a while. You know, you would think there would be a natural up and down motion of the head from breathing, or shoulders would be moving or side, but this thing remains silent and still.
It does rock a little bit in the video back and forth. However, you're correct. It does not appear that it's breathing. The eyes do not blink the entire time the video camera is on this thing. And to me, it almost looks like a Muppet, like someone created a Muppet and stuck it behind some pine branches. And that's what makes these videos so controversial. And Todd Standing has gained that reputation in the Bigfoot research community as being a very controversial researcher. Some have even attributed him to him being the Rick Dyer of Canada. And This Survivor Man TV show came out, as you mentioned, this past Wednesday. They filmed in Canada, and Les has teamed up with Todd Standing looking for Sasquatch. And it's, from what I've gathered from hearing the reviews, the first episode that aired in Canada has been received fairly well so far.
Well, hopefully we'll see what happens here when it comes out in America this next week and see what all the fuss is about. Now, I thought he said he actually kind of bought into this and thought that the video was definitely real, and that he thought this was a creature that he was truly looking at. Do you know if that has been confirmed?
Well, from what I've read online and watching a couple of the YouTube videos before they were pulled, he had his doubts about that video that we're talking about in particular. He was very uncertain that was a real creature. However, in the show, he went from being curious and maybe open-minded a little bit about Bigfoot to almost to the point where he's really intrigued by the subject now. He's had some experiences in the forest, in the Canadian forest, that really has intrigued him and really made him want to look further into the Bigfoot mystery.
Well, that, you know, we're talking about some of the strange locations of these creatures. We're going to talk a little bit about the Rick Dyer debacle in a minute, but this story out of Michigan, Detroit, this could go down as one of the strangest locations I've ever heard of a potential Bigfoot sighting. Do you have that story handy? You can kind of cover for the listeners real quick.
Yeah, that's a very interesting story. And again, I don't know if I put any much into it. This took place in the suburbs of Detroit, and it's a very strange story. I've never heard anything quite similar to this, but a family was out driving on the outskirts of Detroit looking for a house. They wanted to buy themselves a new home. And we all know the economy in Detroit isn't what it used to be. So there's a lot of abandoned homes, especially in the outside of the city. And this particular family, the Brown family, were out driving. It was Mr. Brown, his wife, and two children who spent several hours in their car driving around at the beginning, the middle of February, excuse me. And they were looking for a new home to buy. And as they passed a two-story blue home with broken windows, Brown's wife saw something moving inside the house, and they slowed down the car to get a better look at it. That's when she claimed she saw this hairy arm reaching out of a window. And she stopped and let out a few bad words. And the husband looked, and that's when they saw the whole body of this thing coming out of the window. He said it looked like a monkey, but a very large monkey, and it apparently had a stick or some kind of club in its hand. He said it stood about 7 to 8 foot tall, had short reddish hair, except for the face. And he said the face was human-looking, as crazy as it sounds. His wife told him to keep going, you know, get out of here, take off. But he was so intrigued by what he saw, he just sat there. And he said he got a look at the animal's eyes. They were big and dark. It had a huge head to it and almost a triangular shape. And he was just very intrigued by what he saw. Now, this is the first time I'm aware of someone witnessing a Bigfoot coming out of an abandoned home. Now, I've heard reports over the years from different researchers who've stated, well, they take up residence in these abandoned buildings as shelter, like a temporary shelter. I've never found any evidence or talked to any witnesses personally that have claimed that or seen it. But the story from Michigan is very interesting because, as we know, there's a lot of abandoned homes up there, and it's not far from very rural area where there's a lot of wildlife and forested cover for an animal to slip in and out possibly. So it's an interesting story, but is it just a story? We don't know at this point.
Well, and there's been a lot of these viewings or witnesses that have seen what looks like an ape, and it turns out that they are in it's some kind of hunting garb. And again, I'm not an outside guy, Eric. What do they call those?
The ghillie suit.
Yeah, the ghillie suits. If it's that time of year, could it just be a homeless person that's using a ghillie suit to stay warm? And because they said the head and face was very human-like, correct? As it came out of the building, it just had hairy ape-like arms. And from a distance in the dark, that would almost look like hair hanging down.
That's correct. It very well could have been a misidentification, a vagrant or a homeless person living in that house that came out to scare those people off. And he may have been wearing old ratty clothes that appeared to be hair or fur. It's difficult to say what the eyewitness claimed because he was in a car and they did stop, so he was a distance from the house. But he does give some interesting details. He sees the eyes, very black and dark set eyes, and a triangular-shaped head. And he describes it as a very large monkey carrying a stick. So it's very tough to discern whether or not he truly saw this. And again, as we talked earlier, this might be another case of a person seeing something and their mind adding more to it than what's really there, or maybe even embellishing what he truly saw.
Well, let's talk about the king of embellishments, Rick Dyer. Rick Dyer has made these claims over the years to have found or captured or killed a Bigfoot. And, of course, the big debacle a few years ago, he was involved in with the Bigfoot that was in a freezer. And it turned out it was nothing more than an ape costume that had been frozen and filled with animal entrails to make it look more real through the frozen block of ice. Now, he's come out and claims that to make good on what he tried to pull before, he actually did shoot a Bigfoot, captured it, shot it, and then was it stuffed? Is that what he was saying? It was actually taxidermied, and then he was taking it on tour?
That's correct. It started back in September of 2012, where he claimed he was in San Antonio, Texas, in a small patch of woods behind a Home Depot. And the reason he was there is because someone had reported a few years prior to having seen a Bigfoot in that section of woods. They reported to 911 in that area. So he claims he was out there. He encountered the Bigfoot. He claims he He shot one at first, is what his first claim was. Then it became two, and there were three at the location. And his story got more and more outrageous as time went on. But it eventually ended up where he had this body or taxidermied stuffed dummy, whatever you want to call it, in a glass display case. And he was taking it around the southern part of the country, Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, and he ended up in Florida, where he was trying to get people to, almost like a Barnum and Bailey type thing, a sideshow display or attraction, where he was trying to get people to come in and pay him money to see this supposed dead Bigfoot that he was all over the media bragging about that he shot and killed. And he went to Arizona, and the several locations in Arizona turned him down. He was trying to secure a venue to show it. They denied him. He tried to get into a UFO, a MUFON conference in the Phoenix, Arizona area. They denied him. So he went on to New Mexico, and he was only able to stop at certain roadside locations, pulling off the side of the road to get a couple people to come in and look at it. He ended up in Texas, and he went to, I believe it was called the Alamo Draft House, outside of Houston, Texas. And he had a large turnout for both days that he was there. Over 800 people showed up to look at this supposed Bigfoot. And they paid $20 a person to get in and look at it. And after Texas, he moved on to Florida, down to Daytona during Bike Week. And he was trying to show it down there, but the interest pretty much died at that point. And he went from charging $20 to $10 down to $5 because just nobody was coming to see this Bigfoot.
Well, this guy is such a scam artist. How does he even hit the road and get the attention of anybody at this point when he's been a part of 2 to 3 well-known Bigfoot hoaxes?
That's the million-dollar question. I'm still trying to figure that out because common sense would tell you the guy's a known hoaxer, and he's done it before, and he's even admitted during several radio interviews and on television interviews that he would hoax again. But there are people that truly believe he has the body of a dead Bigfoot. They still believe it, despite all the evidence that's come out and contradicted everything he said.
And it is strange because the video footage that he presents to say is, in fact, a Bigfoot, the Bigfoot that he shot, is a totally different look, color, and everything from what he is taking around and showing, which looks like a really bad bleached pelt of some sort. It doesn't even look real. It looks so fake, the fur, from the photographs that he has allowed to be seen. And if I understand this correctly, he's called multiple news conferences and promises DNA sampling from some high response colleges and universities and medical places, and none of them have come through yet, correct?
Correct. He's put out several dates where he was going to have a major press conference to release the DNA and the medical findings. He claims he took the body to a university in Washington State, but he will not release the name of the university. He will not release the name of the supposed scientists and medical team that studied this and did all the testing on it. He has not released any information. And when the dates came for him to do the press conference, he canceled because somebody couldn't make it or it wasn't a good time. There's always an excuse. And he's released no evidence to prove that this truly is a Bigfoot. And he's stating the DNA evidence may never come out. He may never release it. And the best part of all of it is after he got into Daytona and he found out that people weren't coming to see this, and many people on his team tracker, as he calls it, ended up quitting because they finally figured out it was a hoax. He decided, I'm going to retire from touring the Bigfoot, and he went back to Las Vegas, where he's originally from, and no one's heard from him since. He took his Facebook page down and pretty much disappeared.
It's amazing the amount of money he has bilked from people and fraud. Thank you so much for joining us this evening, Eric Altman from the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society. You could find him. He's going to be at Phenomicon in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, coming up in April. For more information on that, and I'll be there, you can meet me as well. Check out darknessradio.com. Click on the events tab. We'll be back with more Coast to Coast and transhumanism right after this.